As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Out of Cobham, a show about Chelsea from The Athletic. On this episode, magnificent chaos against Liverpool as the Blues start 2022. Lukaku's talking, but Tuchel shows his blue steel. We look back on the other festive fixtures, and there's the small matter of a semi-final reunion with Antonio Conte. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Out of Cobham. Hello, listener. Happy New Year to you. We are back for 2022 to run the rule over all things Chelsea FC. And no surprise, plenty has happened in our brief absence. So let's crack on. Joining me, Matt Davis Adams, are two of the Athletic's Chelsea experts. Hello, Simon Johnson.
Hello. New Year, same old Chelsea.
Dominic Fifield's also with us. Hi, Dob.
Hello, new year, same old Simon Johnson.
You lucky so-and-so.
We wouldn't have it any other way. Chelsea have played thrice since we last spoke, the most recent of which was against Liverpool on Sunday. We'll reflect on that next.
Alonso goes by the direct route. Mike Kelleher.
Wow!
Oh, Kante's moved it forward. Here's Christian Pulisic. Can he make it 2-2? He has! Yes. Unbelievable! What a response from Chelsea!
It's a clear red. I mean, I don't mind if it's 5 seconds into the game. It's the first action. It's a clear red. He doesn't want to challenge. He doesn't see the ball. He just wants to hit with the elbow.
Was crazy, but good crazy. Was nice to watch. Good to coach. Was nice Sunday afternoon.
Chelsea 2, Liverpool 2, the game of the season. The game neither could afford to lose and neither did, but Manchester City won. We'll talk about the game before we talk about the noise around it. Simon, you and I were there and we've said this a few times this season. I think we're still checking our privileges after a year or so with no fans in stadiums. But this was a really amazing spectacle to kind of witness live and be a part of.
Yeah, and he could only go sort of almost forget the fan reaction, which was unbelievable, obviously. But just giving an idea of the sort of reaction from the journalists sort of at half time as we sort of went into the press room, just sort of open mouthed and sort of saying, this feels like a cup tie. Like, and it makes sense because it was a cup tie in many senses because both teams couldn't afford to drop points, which is why you sort of saw this attack via attack. There was no real structure, control to either team's game. And that's what made it such a delight. It was sort of end-to-end, just drama. Neither the defences, which of course both teams have been synonymous for having great defenders, neither of them were at their best defensively. And it just made for an absolute cracker. It was a privilege to be there. Okay, the second half, by the very high standards set by the first half, didn't quite live up to that, but it was still a really good game. And yes, of course, both sides dropped points and you suspect Man City are going to sprint away in the distance, but you almost didn't care about the consequences because it was such a great occasion.
Might not have been such a great game, Dom, had Sadio Mane been sent off after 6 seconds.
No, it wouldn't have been the same at all, I wouldn't have thought. It would have been very much along the lines of the second half at Anfield when Chelsea were coping without Reece James in the first encounter this season. And it was a sending off. The bottom line is, I 6 seconds or not, it was a sending off. He leaps and he makes contact. And it doesn't look good, actually, when you watch it back, even in slow motion. I don't know whether there was any malicious intent in there, but it was horribly clumsy. And the VAR explanation is it was more reckless than violent. It looked pretty violent as well, to be honest. So Liverpool were very fortunate, and Mane was very fortunate. And it would be very interesting to have been a fly on the wall of the plane taken by Mane and Edouard Mendy to jet off to meet up with their Senegal teammates ahead of the African Cup of Nations on Sunday evening, because I'm sure that would have cropped up in the conversation en route.
Yeah, maybe Mendy should have said to Mane, look, we're leaving at a set time, don't worry about it. You'd have to be early for the plane. You can stay until the end of the game. So Chelsea were playing really well, Simon, and then all of a sudden they were 2-0 down. Not Trevor Chalobah's finest moment. We've given him loads of praise this season, but the Salah goal was just absolutely fantastic.
Yes, it was, but it was still poor defensively. Dealing with Chalobah first, I was told that he went into the game with hamstring trouble, which maybe doesn't excuse why he went to clear that ball with his head when it was only a few inches off the ground. It was a bit weird, but you can understand why he wasn't himself. He aggravated it during the game, and that's why he came off. But there was a slight, obviously Pulisic got a lot of criticism, and understandably so, because the chances looked very similar. But there was a difference in that Mane, the gap between Mane and Mendy was bigger than, he had slightly more time than what Pulisic had. And I think Pulisic was kind of like, he had to deal with the ball sort of bounced up, and does he take it first time to around? That's my only caveat for Pulisic, by the way. I still think he should have done better. As for the second goal, Rudiger is actually with Salah. He's drawn out. And he's looking round him and he's going, yeah, there's Salah, I've got him. And then just falls asleep. And Salah makes a great run. And Alonso, in his defence, this is probably the only one doing defending of Alonso at the moment, does spot the run, but Salah just, he does it brilliantly. He fakes and he just gets that half a yard. It's a great finish. And the atmosphere was a bit like, oh dear, it's all over. You know, you did sort of, there was that kind of, oh no, this is all going wrong. And you know, what with all the backdrop going into the game and the bad run of form. So I think Chelsea take a huge amount of credit for their characters to come back into it. And of course it took you don't want to sort of say it's goal of the year after 2 days, but it's going to be a tough one to beat in Kovacic. And it just galvanised the place. And Chelsea have dropped points regularly at home. That's 5 out of the last 6. But the contrast with this one is they came back from a 2-goal deficit. It's a slightly different feel to the feeling of dropping points. It feels like they gained one.
On the Kovacic goal, Dom, there were some magnificent goals throughout the Premier League this weekend. That surely was the best of them, though. I mean, to kind of get off the ground with one foot, kick the ball with the other while you're backpedalling and loop it into the net was not something that we regularly see from the Kovacic cannon, I would suggest.
No, I could hear Liam gasping from afar, even on social media. I just love the way that he backpedals with his eyes fixed on the ball that's looping out the penalty area, and he adjusts his body shape as best he can, because it's still, I still think it's a bit too close to him almost when it arrives. It's still an awkward one to connect with, and it, probably that prompts him to, I think actually for a split second as he makes contact with the ball, I think both feet are actually off the ground. His left foot is just marginally up off the turf. It is just, it's stupendous. I mean, it's ridiculous as a goal. And for a player that has tended to sort of scuff his shots into the mass of bodies in the penalty areas, or even just drill them wide. I mean, his shooting has been a major issue since he came to Chelsea, but that was just, it's almost like he's been saving it all for that one moment. It was a magnificent goal, and it really, I mean, I was only watching it on the television, but you could tell it just pepped belief in a blink of an eye. Suddenly Chelsea thought, wow, we can get back into this. And it probably even caught them by surprise that they had their opportunity to get level even in the period that remained before half-time. I think Kovacic's goal went in the 42nd minute, and yet, you know, Kanté's flicking Christian Pulisic through for a very good finish himself as well, 3 minutes later. So it's just the frenzy of it, the breathless and relentless nature of that half really summed up in three magnificent minutes at the end of the period.
Can I just say, though, that the glorious nature of that moment was ruined by a totally unnecessary VAR check?
Like one of those tiresome bores who was pointing out, actually, Boxing Day was on the 27th this year because the 26th was a weekend. Like, go away, bye. You can't rule out goals like that. They're too beautiful.
But it did, you know, because there was that initial celebration, wasn't there? And then it all went, oh, no. And it took quite a while to sort of go, oh, was Rudiger interfering with Kelleher, and he was in an offside position. But the ball was sort of so high over Rudiger's head that Kelleher must have seen it, you know, anyway. And that annoyed, you know, that did annoy me, that the sort of, again, it was another example of goals not being able to be properly celebrated because of VAR. But, you know, I suppose the VAR frustration was that was being looked at, and yet sort of the Azpilicueta incident, which was supposedly looked at, didn't quite get the same length of time given to what take place. But no, magnificent. It reminded me, I did tweet about it, reminded me of Michael Essien's volley against Barcelona at the same end in 2009, albeit that was with his left foot, but the same sort of unexpected, remarkable strike coming off the woodwork and everyone going nuts. It was a very similar moment.
Big goal for Christian Pulisic as well, Dom. I mean, in terms of the quality of the goals in this game, maybe not up there with Salah and Kovacic, but still an excellent finish. But more importantly, for a player who's struggled to actually impact games since he's come back into the team, this was a kind of a tangible effect that he had on the match. Tuchel said afterwards there's still room for improvement, but he's got this to kind of cling on to and take into his next appearance.
Absolutely. I mean, we shouldn't forget that he has been a victim of his own versatility a bit of late. I mean, the idea that Christian Pulisic could lead the line as a number nine does still seem vaguely ridiculous in the Premier League. I mean, he hasn't really had a positive effect in that role, and he's sort of been much around. I think he played about three positions on Sunday as well. I mean, he was, you know, wing back, one of the number 10s. I mean, he's all over the place in terms of the roles he's being asked to fulfil. And you know, sometimes that lack of continuity coupled with all the length of time it's taken him to regain full fitness and to get regular involvement in the team has probably contributed to his slightly haphazard form. But it was timely, definitely. And it's given the early miss as well, In the first few minutes of the game, it was critical that he had a positive impact to really choke a few of the doubters. So he finished it emphatically. It was a great finish. And then in the second half, obviously, they had to rely on him to fill in different roles in the side once again. So he has got a future at Chelsea, I think. I mean, there is clearly talent there. It's just a matter of him, A, justifying his selection, but B, probably enjoying a period of time where he's actually in one settled position.
I felt a bit bad because I did highlight how much of a shocker he was having in the first half.
That was a tactic though, wasn't it?
It was. Reverse psychology.
Exactly.
The cruelest thing I could say about him was, this is very cruel and very unfair, was he was involved in a sprint with Konaté. And the look of anguish, and it was right in front of the press, and the look of anguish and strain on his face, it reminded me of trying to, you know, run for the train at Waterloo and my own struggles.
Just when you hear that noise of the beep, 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 beep as the doors are closing,
It was that sort of, oh, the body is willing, but it's incapable. It was, you do wonder whether the FA Cup final hamstring, and he's only human, so it's understandable it's still on his mind, that he doesn't want to quite go full pelt, because I think Pulisic from sort of pre-cup final injury would have won that race. Perhaps as well, he's had a few injuries since then. But I was so, I thought full credit to him in terms of taking that chance, because he would have known that the whole stadium was like almost waiting to pounce on him if he missed it, like he missed that early one-on-one, and he tucked it away brilliantly. And I did think his game picked up noticeably after that. He really sort of, that confidence boost seemed to benefit him. But again, as Dom rightly highlights, I mean, where does he play next? You know, is he going to play wing back? Is he going to play left, number 10? Is he going to lead the line? You know, it's, you do have to throw that into the equation that he doesn't know where he's playing from one week to the next.
We're nearly 20 minutes in and we haven't got to Romelu Lukaku yet. So well done us. We will do in a second. But before we leave the actual game, Dom, I just wonder if we're looking at this maybe through the wrong sort of lens, in that everybody's saying, oh, the title chase is over, it's really disappointing, Chelsea have dropped out of it. Well, they finished 19 points behind City last season, and they've got 10 more points now than they did at this stage last term. So they have made progress.
Yeah, and it does need context. In most seasons, and certainly in most leagues, I would have thought that if a team has got 43 points after 21 matches, or indeed 42 points after 20, which is what Liverpool have got now, there wouldn't be talk of crisis. It's only because of Manchester City's utter brilliance, 53 points from 21 games, 11 Premier League wins on the bounce, that is the context in which Chelsea and Liverpool are having to compete in terms of the title race. And, you know, a lot of the disappointment is born of the fact that if you go back a month, we thought this was going to be a three-pronged assault on the title. We thought we were going to have a bit of drama here where, you know, Manchester City were going to be struggling against two other contenders to win this Premier League title. Well, it doesn't look as if that's going to be the case. It's only taken a month. It's only taken December for that to happen. I think Chelsea dropped 9 points in December. City didn't drop any. And it's just completely gone the other way now. But you're right, you need context. It's about building. It's about, it's not about suddenly changing this overnight, I don't think that's feasible, really, given what Guardiola has instilled at City and built at City. So maybe we do need to look at the title race in a different way. Just briefly on that game again, a brilliant helter-skelter, relentless, frantic game of football. I don't understand how Chelsea could muster a performance that had that much energy in it, having watched them play against Brighton the previous week, when they didn't look as if they had anything left at all in their engines. They were running on fumes that night. And yet here we had Kovacic tearing around like a lunatic throughout the game, even before he scored his goal. Kante doing what Kante does. You know, Chalobah, even after that early mistake, you know, the block that he puts in on Salah, I think it is, in that what remained of that first half, to, if he's got sore hamstrings, to do that and to play. I presume this is all adrenaline fueled, but it was utterly sensational, and it defies belief, really, how these two teams, after the draining nature of their Christmas programs, particularly Chelsea after 9 games in December, could summon that level of energy. You know, that maybe it was part of the Lukaku thing gets thrown in there because they felt as if they were doing it against the odds, almost against Liverpool. But it was a phenomenal performance from both teams and a phenomenal game of football as a result.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Let's talk about Lukaku then. It's this interview that he did with Sky Italia 3 weeks ago, ostensibly to say goodbye to Inter Milan supporters, but he also had something to say about his current manager. I'm not happy with the situation at Chelsea. Tuchel's chosen to play another system. I won't give up. I'll be professional, he said, whilst being incredibly unprofessional. Simon, I mean, the first thing to note on this is that Chelsea supporters seem to be backing Thomas Tuchel on this. His name was sung loud and proud, really, from the first whistle.
Yeah, and it didn't surprise me because, you know, Lukaku essentially slapped the club that feeds him and the fans that support him. I mean, Chelsea fans have been singing his name from day one, despite him not actually delivering on his transfer fee yet. There's been flashes, but they've stood by him as they've stood by Timo Werner, Kai Havertz, etc. during their form issues. I think that's a significant help for Tuchel because whenever we've been confronted with player power issues in the past, a manager has been put in a awkward position. But you do get the feeling he's got the support, not only the fans, but at the moment he's got the support of the club as well, who are equally as upset as he is. I'm just completely baffled by what Lukaku's done, really, because yes, there's the talk of, and one of the main motivations is that he was trying to make amends with Inter Milan fans, but by doing so has upset the fans of the club he now plays for. Secondly, to remotely complain about tactics and systems and not being happy at Chelsea when you've not actually played that much was very odd. The reason why he'd not been in the team at the time of the interview was because he'd been out with an ankle injury and was being slowly phased back in the team. Now, the timing of this interview is significant because it was the day after Chelsea played Manchester United, and he can understand why Romelu Lukaku would have been desperate to face his old club and prove a point against them, but he only got 8 minutes. Now, that was a baffling decision by Tuchel to only give him 8 minutes, but it's still no excuse to then sort of have the slightest moan, albeit it's only a small chunk of the interview that he has a moan about Chelsea. But to remotely put Thomas Tuchel, Chelsea, any kind of player comment about unhappiness at Chelsea, but particularly when you're the club record buy, is just throwing a can of petrol on a bonfire, because it will inevitably attract a lot of scrutiny of what's really happening at Chelsea. And then the worst thing of all is the timing of it coming out just ahead of the transfer window and just as Chelsea are going through a tough period. So it's just own goal after own goal as far as Lukaku's concerned. And it's not even worked in terms of making amends with Inter Milan fans, who aren't interested in any conciliatory comments anyway. They've moved on and they think they don't really believe a word that Lukaku said, because back in June he said he wanted to stay and then he left. So it just seems like this is a man who's not very happy with life at the moment, and has decided, instead of taking some responsibility, has decided to point the finger at other people for why it's not going so well.
Producer Lucy, very passionate on this. She is a Chelsea fan and she's written in our Google Doc in all caps, which means she's serious. The worst bit as a fan was him saying he wants to go back to Milan while he's still in the prime, not at the end of his career. 3 exclamation marks, 5 exclamation marks. Just to give you a sense of the strength of feeling amongst Chelsea supporters and our producer there. There's a huge explainer on this on The Athletic, which goes into great detail. It's the sort of thing The Athletic does so brilliantly. Athletic.com/ChelseaPod is the place to go to sign up if you want to read it. Dom, how does this resolve itself, do you think? Because Lukaku talks about Barcelona and Bayern Munich and Real Madrid, and I can't see any of those clubs being remotely interested in them. Barcelona might be, but they can't afford him. Real Madrid want Haaland or Mbappe, and Bayern wouldn't touch a player who does this kind of thing, especially when they've got Robert Lewandowski. So there's no obvious exit path for him. He's going to have to make a grovelling apology and hope for the best, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the only way forward. I think it will probably end up blowing over in terms of within the club. Don't get me wrong, the hierarchy would have been unbelievably annoyed at this. Tuchel would have been dismayed at it as well, given the release was as Simon suggests, at a time when the team are labouring for the first time really under his stewardship. And I sort of came into this thinking, let's try and play devil's advocate here and try and get the other side of the story. But it's so misguided to have done this, to placate a club that you've left behind, technically. I mean, you've left them behind. They've gone now. You're back at the club that you profess to have supported since you were 11. And you must have known, Lukaku must have known that it was going to have whatever he said, even if it was passing comments, when the main focus of the interview was very much on his time at Inter, even with passing comments, it was going to annoy Chelsea supporters. I would say, though, that it's his comments actually in isolation are not as bad as Diego Costa going on strike at Chelsea and refusing to come back from pre-season, or you go to Luis Suarez at Liverpool in the first time he agitated to leave. I think Brendan Rodgers banished him to an outlying training pitch to train on his own at Melwood, and that was reconcilable. He actually came back in and played such a major part in competing for a Premier League title subsequently. The comments themselves, when you actually look at them, they're not actually as bad as that, but the timing is appalling. It's also unnecessary that it none of it was required. The other thing that I feel we're slightly hypocritical about is, and again, he shouldn't have said it, but Lukaku is complaining about Chelsea not necessarily playing to his strengths. Well, we've been saying that for the last 3 months, that Chelsea haven't been playing to his strengths. We're still trying to work out how they do that. And we don't know the combination of the tens. We don't know the combination of where the width comes and what type of ball they should be playing. Should he have a playing partner? Should he be playing with Timo Werner? That is a debate that is ongoing, and he's just expressed it stupidly because he shouldn't have done. There was no need for him to say it because it was so obvious for everybody else. But he is just saying what we've been saying for an awfully long time. But the other problem that he's got now is that Chelsea played bloody well without him on Sunday. And that fluid front three where they have that pace and that energy around the dynamism around the team is possibly born of having players of that ilk as opposed to Lukaku, who does slow up the play. That's, I think Chelsea and Tuchel would admit when they bought him, they knew that was a risk that they were going to take, that he having him in the team just makes Chelsea play in a slightly different way, in a slightly more laboured way sometimes. So, yeah, he's got a big job to get reintegrated into this setup now, not least with Kai Havertz approaching full fitness again. And, you know, whether he'd be involved against Antonio Conte's Tottenham Hotspur, the irony that he'd be up against the one manager that's really got the best out of him. He's got two games against them coming up now. It's so unnecessary, but maybe in time we'll sort of see that it's some of the comments aren't quite as bad as they might have been.
I think a lot of his views were clumsily expressed,
yeah,
weren't they?
Absolutely.
I think, and one of the mistakes he made was doing it totally independently. I mean, even his own representatives didn't know about it, which is unheard of, let alone the club.
Not unheard of with him, though.
No, he is a character that always wants to feel the love. And perhaps he's finding out at Chelsea that, hang on, I'm not the biggest fish in the pond. I'm just one of many. I'm not going to get the special treatment, the special love. Like Tuchel's got to keep a lot of people happy, not just him. The unfortunate thing is that he's had conversations since that interview was made with Tuchel, and they talked about how to get more out of him and how it was all going to work. And he referred to this after the Aston Villa performance. The shame is that in that 1.5 games, the second half of the Villa and the whole game against Brighton, you saw the Lukaku that Chelsea signed. He was magnificent and showed just why Chelsea could have been a lot closer to Man City if this had been a fit Lukaku for the whole campaign. Another sort of sympathetic comment I will make about Lukaku is that we should always bear in mind that no matter how much a player earns, that their personal happiness, welfare, will have an effect on their state of mind, their thinking, their happiness. And I don't think he is happy or has been happy living back in England. I mean, he's not been able to see his son as much as he saw him in Milan, or his mother. He spent Christmas in isolation because he had COVID. He talked about that to another broadcaster. And I know sort of a lot of Chelsea fans probably listen to this will probably go, well, don't care, you know, he shouldn't have said what he said. And, you know, of course he shouldn't. But I think at the timing of the interview, the day after the United game, he's upset, he's not played. He just wasn't thinking clearly at the time he did that interview. I don't know whether, I'm sure, Matt, you want to ask about the decision Tuchel made to leave him out of the squad. And sort of we were sort of having a chat with it Saturday evening. And when it first started to emerge that he was likely to be left out. And it didn't surprise me at all. I think Tuchel was in a bit of a damn if you do, damn if you don't situation. But he has to send a message to that dressing room that you can't go off speaking your mind and putting any kind of negative connotation on how he's running the team or just speaking out of turn. He has to send that message. He can't have the club record by sort of being able to sort of get away with something like that. Because what kind of precedent does that send? It's like, oh, I'm really upset with you, but I'm going to play you on Sunday anyway. It just sort of says to everyone, well, he's not really the man in charge, the players are. And whilst you could argue it came back to bite Chelsea, I think that with Lukaku in that team on Sunday, Chelsea would have won the game. Especially when you think that Callum Hudson-Odoi was brought on as a substitute to play up front. He certainly would have given that Liverpool defence much more of a runaround. But if Lukaku is recalled, and of course we're recording this before the meeting on Monday, if Lukaku is recalled for Spurs and scores against Spurs, I think Chelsea fans will find it in their hearts to forgive him.
Be fascinating to see what happens next and what kind of reaction he gets from the crowd when he does come back. Right, next we're going to stop talking about Romelu Lukaku and have a quick chat about two games in which Romelu Lukaku scored.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Plenty of our panel predicted a win and a draw for the Blues in the games against Aston Villa and Brighton and Hove Albion in our pre-Christmas pod, but I'm not sure any of us got the order in which those 4 points would come correct. Chelsea came from behind to win 3-1 at Villa Park on Boxing Day before conceding an injury time equaliser against Brighton at the Bridge on the 29th. Two wildly contrasting results, these really. A fine come from behind win at a team who were in pretty decent form, and then a draw at home to a side on paper who should have been dealt with fairly comfortably. Simon, was the disparity between those two performances purely down to fatigue and absentees, or was there something else going on?
I think as Dom alluded to earlier, I think it was fatigue. Brighton game, they just looked absolutely shattered. And you got to remember as well that Brighton had two 11-day breaks during December because they had games called off. So Chelsea played, I think, at least twice the amount of games that Brighton had. So is there any surprise? And that's not demeaning Brighton's performance. Brighton were very good as well, and they've gone on to back up that performance with other good victories, including one against Everton. But yeah, I just felt that they were running on empty in that Brighton game. As for Villa, which was a positive comeback, already touched on Lukaku and the brilliant impact he made. It was a great show of character, particularly when you think of the man of the goal they went behind to. It's just a sort of catalogue of rubbish goals that Chelsea concede at the moment. Just one after the other, you're just watching them going, what is going on? I blame myself and Dom for writing that Premier League best defensive record piece because it's been a disaster almost ever since. I'd give a little shout out to Hudson-Odoi for the Villa game, because he's been getting a lot of stick again, and I understand why. But at the same time, in that Villa game, he won the penalty, he crossed for Lukaku's goal, and put Lukaku through for the second penalty. So he has this knack, even when he does make bad decisions and his end product isn't right, that he still can affect games in a positive manner.
He's also 21 and he's never had a loan spell. Yeah. I think that gets overlooked a little bit, doesn't it? He's not somebody who played 50 games in the Football League and got a bit announced that way. So a bit of patience with Hudson-Odoi, I think. The Brighton game, Dom, you were on duty for. Obviously, the late goal, really the headline, but also Reece James injured, out for 6 to 8 weeks. That's a massive loss.
Yeah, it's clipped Chelsea's wings to lose both Reece James and Ben Chilwell. They are Chelsea's Alexander-Arnold and Robertson, basically. And they're so integral to the system that Tuchel wants to play. I mean, you saw, even against Liverpool, I was amazed that they got as much energy as they did from Azpilicueta and Marcus Alonso initially, and then every combination of right wing back they tried thereafter. I think Christian Pulisic had a go at one point, and they sort of flitted through various different systems. And it may be that in time, given that James and Chilwell will be out for some time now, that Tuchel has to explore different systems to see whether they suit the personnel that he's got available, because he's not going to get the same incision from Azpilicueta at right wing back. He might do it from a Pulisic or a Hudson-Odoi possibly, but then, as we've discussed already, that those guys would much rather be in different areas of the team. So it was damaging in that respect. I haven't seen Chelsea dominated. I mean, okay, by Manchester City they were earlier this season, arguably, but by a team that relatively lowly in the table, I've not seen that happen for years. In the way that Brighton came to Stamford Bridge and for long periods of that game overran Chelsea, and that is down to fatigue. I probably, there could have been better management used over the and a better distribution of minutes, let's say, over the course of December, to try and alleviate the pressure that's being put on the same players every week. Well, not every week, every 3 days, really. When you looked at the unused players on the bench that night, okay, we all know the likes of Ross Barkley don't have long-term futures at Chelsea, but they are full internationals. There should have been a way of getting more from Barkley or Saul for certain games in December to at least alleviate the pressure that's been put on other players to fill the breach, basically. And I just think we saw that game was just one match too many. Something that Tuchel had been warning would happen for a long time, but I think something that he's partly culpable for allowing to happen, because a deep squad hasn't necessarily been used in the best way, even with COVID, even with injuries, in my opinion.
Just a minor add to the Brighton game. Don't forget that Tuchel had to use up two of his subs by half-time. Mm. So because of injury, because of Christensen as well. So you can imagine if he'd had all three still in his locker, that would have made a difference sort of in the last 20 minutes. But it's still... I also thought Bissouma was putting out a good sort of come and get me plea, especially, well, one doesn't want to say that Conte has got to move on at some point. We've been down that road before, but with all his injury issues and stuff, it was just another little... sign, not just to Chelsea, but to a number of top clubs, that he's the real deal.
Penny for the thoughts of Tino Livramento. I mean, you would have thought he would actually have ended up getting quite a lot of game time at Chelsea this season, whether it's better for his development to play a whole season at Southampton. I mean, you could maybe even stretch that as far as Tarek Lamptey, of course, played in the Brighton game too, but you can't keep them all, I suppose. The games just keep on coming for Chelsea. Next today, we'll look ahead to the first leg of the League Cup semi-final.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Chelsea welcomes Spurs to Stamford Bridge. Welcome's probably not the right word, is it? Chelsea hosts Spurs at Stamford Bridge in the first leg of the League Cup semi-final on Wednesday. It's the repeat of the 2019 semi. Chelsea eventually prevailed on penalties after two legs in that one. It's the first of three games against Spurs this month. What have you made of Antonio Conte's Tottenham, Dom? I can't quite get my head around it. They seem to be on a pretty good run, but they've played fairly modest opposition. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think that's, other than the Liverpool game where they did play well with a lot of energy in that match, it's a period of adjustment. I don't think any Spurs manager has ever done what he's done in terms of the unbeaten start to a league, to taking over certainly in the league. I think it's seven matches now, is it? So he's obviously made a positive impact. But in this period, he's also working out which players that he wants their long term and which players he doesn't, probably more to the key, and you're seeing some discarded already, others in and out, and the usual suspects being relied upon to carry Spurs forward. I think you'd imagine that he would be particularly motivated to send a team out at Stamford Bridge to do a job on Chelsea, given the acrimonious nature of his departure from the club back in 2018 and the various employment tribunals that followed. I think it was the most expensive sacking of Chelsea's history, possibly football's history. So over £26 million they ended up forking out just to get rid of him and his staff. And he had a lot of staff. I think eight of them at least were compensated in that package. And he brought 11 with him, I think, so didn't he? An entire team. But I'm really intrigued to see how the supporters take to him. I'm intrigued to see what happens if Spurs score a goal at a critical time in the game at Stamford Bridge, and whether he goes berserk and tears off down the touchline towards the away support. Lots of intrigue like that, and it's, yeah, it'll be. We're used to Chelsea, ex-Chelsea managers coming back to Stamford Bridge, obviously, but this one seems to have slightly more edge to it, just in the nature of how it all unravelled over his time at the club.
Do you think he will get a good reception, Simon, or will it just be kind of, let's ignore him?
Well, I've spoken to a few for a piece that Dom and I are doing ahead of the game, and there was a kind of we don't respect him anymore, but we still respect what he did. I think it also depends what Conte's like pre and during the match. I can't imagine Conte's going to say anything incendiary like a Jose Mourinho might do. But where I may sort of question is if Tottenham score, is Antonio the kind of guy that can keep himself under control? Because Chelsea fans know better than most that he's a bit of, he likes a goal celebration. And if that happens, I think Chelsea fans would react, and probably understandably so, and they won't like that. So I can't see him being booed unless he does something to provoke it. I like to think so as well, because he did a remarkable job in that first season. Not so much the second season, but that first season title win is arguably the best achievement of all the title wins, you know, given the circumstances. And it was Chelsea that sacked him in the end. Yes, of course, Conte could have perhaps handled himself a lot better in that second season, but Chelsea were the ones that decided to get rid. And then sort of why should he then perhaps sort of think he owes Chelsea any favours after that, albeit he knows the rivalry that exists between the two clubs.
Going to be fascinating, these three games over the course of the next month. Chelsea against Tottenham will have a big say in both clubs' seasons. The return leg of that semi, by the way, takes place at the Still Can't Find a Suitable Sponsor to Make It the stadium name on Wednesday the 12th of January. Right, we've done a few plugs on what's up on The Athletic Chelsea-wise. Dom, I'm interested in your piece on Mo Salah's time at Chelsea, because yesterday was the first time that he managed to score for Liverpool at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, I'm not sure Chelsea supporters need reminding that Mo Salah was once on their books. I found it quite an interesting exercise to go back because at the time Mo Salah really didn't impinge upon our consciousness very much as a Chelsea player. He was somebody that we'd seen play for Basel against Chelsea a few times in the Europa League and the Champions League, and he'd done well against them. He'd scored in three games against them. He looked quick. He looked direct. He was young. So when Chelsea bought him, again, when they bought him, the focus was all about on Juan Mata leaving. It wasn't really on Mo Salah arriving. But sort of going back over the notes I'd made at the time and the press conferences I'd been at and the matches where he played, because he started six games on the bounce towards the end of that season, 2013-14, a period where Chelsea were very much in transition and looking forward to that summer when they bought Fabregas and Diego Costa. He had a little bit of a platform there, and he thought he might kick on, and then it just didn't happen. He barely played 50 minutes of football for Chelsea, I think 30 minutes actually the following season, before being loaned out to Fiorentina and then starting this sort of adventure in Italy that ended up with Roma. But it was, I found it quite an interesting little exercise, and something to remember the tone of Jose Mourinho talking about it at the time and how that changed over time. You know, this player is going to be part of our future. He sort of sums up personifies the way we want to go, the young, dynamic players that we're going to have in our team. We're going to be a very much a possession-based side, and we're going to have all these, you know, young, thrusting young players who are going to do brilliantly for us. And then within 12 months, he's being loaned out, and actually, let's just get rid of him and bring Juan Cuadrado in instead.
Yeah, narrator, he was not as good.
There is a question, a genuine question, like a genuine poll. Like, who did Chelsea regret losing the most, De Bruyne or Salah? I mean, it's got to be pretty close, wouldn't you think? I mean,
who would you go for?
I mean, I just love De Bruyne as a player. You know, I just love that. That's just a personal preference in terms of that silky, that guy that creates. That's always been my kind of player. But the way Salah's playing right now, I mean, we did a piece on The Athletic, I think back in October, I think it was, about who's the best player in the world right now. And I thought it was a bit premature to be talking about Salah, because it had only been a few months that he'd been on this sort of scoring every week kind of run, and he just thought, right, well, yeah, it's a bit premature. But the fact that we're now sort of 4 or 5 months into the season and he's doing it, he's got a very genuine claim now to be best player in the world, and it's kind of highlighting that sort of ability to be prolific is exactly what Chelsea are missing right now. So you could argue the two players Chelsea need the most, you'd say you go for Salah.
It's interesting though, a lot of the comments on the piece did touch upon the idea that neither De Bruyne nor Salah would have developed in this way and become the players that they are today had they not had that painful rejection from Chelsea en route, and that spurred them on. And it's a very valid argument. I mean, De Bruyne's career was not going anywhere at Chelsea at the time. He didn't look at him and think, why are Chelsea not picking a world-class talent here? Because he just hadn't developed at all. It took the spell at Wolfsburg to pep up his confidence and for City then to take the plunge on him. And the same could apply to Salah. I mean, he scored two goals. But as I say, I mean, I don't think there was any sense of outrage when he was loaned to Fiorentina. No one thought, my word, what are Chelsea doing here? He just didn't seem ready. But when he came back from Roma to Liverpool and he very much was ready. I mean, Liverpool had only valued him at £8 million. That's why he didn't join them in the first place back in 2014. It was, you know, Chelsea pushed the boat out to £11 million to get him in. Well, you add another £100 million onto that now, at least.
The lesson learned, this is before we wrap up, before it reaches 5 hours, the lesson learned, like the biggest thing about what happened with those two is it's because of what happened with those two that you now see Chelsea putting in buyback clauses or first option clauses. That was the biggest mistake that Chelsea made, was not having those options in those loan deals. And unfortunately, they're putting those options in now on talented players, but perhaps ones that aren't in the world-class category like those two are.
Also shows the importance of man management in the modern game, I suppose, doesn't it? Because you see how Klopp's put his arm around Salah and looked after him, and how, you know, De Bruyne and Guardiola go together hand in glove, and that is always preferable to somebody shouting at you and telling you you're not very good, like Jose Mourinho has tended to do in the latter stages of his career. Work-wise, Simon, are you on Lukaku watch for the rest of the week? Of course, we've got the game on Wednesday as well.
This is my life. We're trying to, like everyone, be trying to find out what happens in this Monday meeting, whether he plays against Spurs, then, yeah, cover the Spurs game. There's also a piece which has been in the locker for a while now. I wrote it pre-Christmas, but that's not to say it's aged, like myself. It's a big read on Kepa, who, of course, is going to be very important now that Edouard Mendy's gone off to the African Cup of Nations.
The man who I've picked to be Chelsea's number one goalie from next season, to widespread derision. Anyway, athletic.com/ChelseaPod is the place to go to sign up if you aren't currently a subscriber. We'll be back on Thursday to reflect on the Spurs semi-first leg and look ahead to the FA Cup tie with National League side Chesterfield. Do join us for that if you can. Until then, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.